And welcome in to the second half of Chase Willie and D-Mace. There's nothing we can do about this microphone. I'm looking forward, though. I'm going to have strong shoulder traps. Muscles or traps and stuff, because it's a workout every day to hold this microphone up. I might as well just bring a headset or something. But it is time to talk to Jonathan Hutton, Willie Donick, and Derek Mason here with you. And Jonathan Hutton from Outkick is sponsored by Blend Bar with Davidoff's Cigars and Edley's Barbecue. And Jonathan, it's good to talk to you again. Welcome in. This time I'm back in the States and we can actually communicate. I can't just watch you and listen and speak into a broken Wi-Fi. Prague's got to work on that, by the way. We got problems over there.
Yeah, we have to get the overseas internet connection fixed for you next time, Willie. You're not working hard enough. You need to be on the show at night, I'm sure, there. Hey, good to be with you guys. D-Mace, hope you're well.
I'm doing well. How about yourself, John? Jonathan?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm...
I call you Jonathan. I usually call you Hut, but for some reason I called you Jonathan. That's something I think that's something reserved for, like, your wife or your mom or your best buddy. So I'm just going to call you Hutton.
My mom definitely calls me Jonathan. Everyone else calls me Hutton except for three people. One of them is a guy who ran a farm next to the farm I grew up on named Mike Bolden. He calls me Big John. He always has. There's another guy that calls me John. Then I just let him do it. And then there's Doug Matthews, who for whatever reason – has always called me John, and I let him get away with it. Those are the three. Mace, if you would like to be the fourth, have at it.
Well, Hutton, tell us about Edley's. Number one, I am a big fan. There's one on the east side that I have frequented a lot, even though I live with all vegetarians, and none of them will ever go there. But I like to sneak off, get a little action over there sometimes. But tell us about Edley's Barbecue.
Well, even the vegetarians can enjoy it. The homemade sides, made from scratch, home-style recipes, delicious. And their barbecue is the best I've had. Nashville style barbecue is Edley's Barbecue, made to order, great for tailgating, 25, 50 count wing platters, smoked pulled pork, tender turkey, and so much more. So let Edley's handle your next tailgate. They also cater. You can grab for take home and then make meals throughout the week if you'd like. Edley'sBBQ.com to learn more. You mentioned the locations, Willie, East Nashville, Sylvan Park, and 12 South. They're in Chattanooga as well, as plus other locations. And I love Will and Catherine Newman. They've been great to me and my family. And his grandfather and my grandfather go back a ways with the family. So it's cool to have them on board here with us.
All right. So, Hutt, let's talk Titans here. It's a great time to do some self-evaluating at the bye week. They're sitting at 3-2. They're atop a division that's as winnable as we thought it would be. We still think the Jags are better and probably going to continue to get better. But as you look at the roster, if you're John Robinson right now and you're trying to determine how much do I want to play for this year, how good can I get my team when you consider I'm probably going to have to go through Buffalo and or Kansas City to get there? And how much am I thinking, how much better can I be next year if I hold on to the assets and I start over, what's going through your mind if you're the GM?
So, I think we got a glimpse of this in the draft, Willie. It was a weird draft to me. Not because they traded AJ Brown. I was shocked by that. We've been over that, and they have Treylon Burks. I mean, that made sense because they traded AJ Brown. But they drafted for the future while trying to stay in the present here and now. They drafted Malik Willis. They draft Hassan Haskins while giving Derrick Henry a $2 million raise 4 months later. It's something that Roger McCreary at the time was interesting in the second round. And he's much better than Caleb Farley in terms of his physicality and point of attack. He gives up big plays, but he's not getting beat by 10 yards while doing it. It's peculiar in a way because I thought the window – they were trying to keep that open based on Tannehill's contract, knowing that they have Henry coming back and the offensive line. They chose to bounce Saffold, and that was pretty much it, trying to figure out right tackle. With that being said, they need to take advantage of every opportunity they have to win now, because the roster to me is going to look vastly different a year from now, and there's no guarantees. They have not capitalized nearly to the extent I think they should have based on 2020. We go back to 2019 and that run. 2020, 2021, last year, 12 wins, having no business being the number one seed with the roster that they had. So I'm not allowing myself to factor in injuries right now when they didn't make any excuse a year ago. So they need to win. That's the bar. Winning the division is great. They're past that, though, and that's a compliment to them for achieving that mark where we don't need to throw parades because they're great in the bad division. We used to. We don't have to do that anymore because they've reset the bar. They've set a higher standard. And I feel like most fans are viewing them in that lens, especially with a $30 million quarterback and a $14 million running back and their top wide receivers now making plays in the unbeaten Philadelphia Eagles franchise.
All right. So here's, to me, a key question, because as I sit here and I determine, do I want to try to load up and be the best I can be this year, knowing that this division is winnable? Part of the answer has to be, what do I think my team could look like next year if I run it back with Tannehill and Henry again and just reset and try to do the best I can? I'm holding on to all my picks, and I'm dealing with the cap stuff. I got to sign Jeffrey Simmons. We know that. But what does my roster look like next year? How good could I be next year if I'm not looking for a new quarterback, et cetera?
I still think it's a lot different. I think Lawan's not back, right? Like I'm right. Looking at a new left tackle, probably a center. Although they love what Ben Jones is bringing. He was playing hurt the other day. Questions at left guard for sure. I think they believe in right guard when he's healthy, and at right tackle, Petit Frere is either going to be there or playing the left side. So let's just start up front, because that's where Robinson started whenever he took over the franchise, making personnel decisions. They are vastly worse, putting that politely, at wide receiver. You know, there are certain areas of the roster I feel like they can improve. You mentioned getting this started, going into the bye week and assessing where they are. I think there are things they can work on and improve with roster-wise and scheme-wise. There are certain things they're just not going to be able to do until the offseason. Wide receiver is one of them, unless they're making some massive trade, and I don't know why they would do that now when they wouldn't pay A.J. Brown a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. And defensively, I stood on the mountaintops and said, this is a top one, two, three defense in the NFL based on how Caleb Farley comes out and plays. And they don't trust him. And, you know, I don't blame them right now. I don't blame the fans for jumping on Farley with what he's been doing early on, because he barely played in college. They made the draft pick. He came in hurt and was hurt last year. If they get better corner play, they're going to be fine. They're fine on defense right now anyway. Don't get me wrong. But the defense and the run game are going to have to support whatever it is they're going to do. And I don't think that philosophy changes all that much based on the quarterback coming back or not. I'm not saying that's Malik Willis taking over either, Willie. I'm just saying Tannehill is within an offensive structure that I think fits him very well. I think they value that. At the same time, they also at this point have to value winning in the postseason. And we're comparing them to Kansas City and Buffalo. If I'm the Titans, I'm trying to win at home in the playoffs against a lesser seed that's playing on the road in the second weekend of the playoffs if they win the division. That's first and foremost. They've got to get back to Kansas City and Buffalo, and I don't think those two are coming through Nashville.
And that's what we were discussing, Jonathan. We're talking to Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. What does this team moving forward looks like? Because to me, Willie brought up three phases they can possibly be in. Go forward, transition, or rebuild. I think they're more so in the transition stage. They don't want to rebuild. I think they're good enough to not have to rebuild, but they're not good enough to go forward. And that was evident when they traded away A.J. Brown. They said, listen, we're still in this. We can win, but we're sort of moving away from that. We're going to rely heavy on our defense and our running game. That's just what we're going to do. That's the team we are. That's our identity. But moving forward with Ryan Tannehill, I do believe if Malik Willis doesn't show them enough during the offseason next year, then I think they're almost going to be forced in a good way to say, you know what, we got a quarterback here we like. He fits into what we want to do. We know his limitations. So with that being said, we're going to give him an extra year, but he's not going to be making the same amount of money that he was going to be making last year, almost $30 million, if not $30 million. If we can cut that almost in half for the next 2 years and let him know and understand why we're doing it, and then we can build around him. Because now, if we can get better around him, we know what we have in him.
All right, hold that thought. I want you to answer that question on the other side. Is what do you think the span of Ryan Tannehill is, and what the right strategy is contract-wise? It's an interesting proposal by D-Mace. Is can you get that cap figure down around what you would need to be able to address other needs on the roster? Stay tuned. We're talking to Jonathan Hutton from OutKick. We're talking Titans here on 102.5 The Game. Oh, a little Top Gun soundtrack coming at you here. A little throwback. Willie Donick and Derek Mason here with you. We're talking with Jonathan Hutton from OutKick, and we're talking Tennessee Titans. We asked him before the break to think about it. What does he see as the span of the Ryan Tannehill era? As you sit there right now, are you thinking about him being your quarterback for the next couple of years? Hutt, what do you say?
Mace, so this was what I was going to say before we went to break. It depends on not if they lose, but how they lose in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Because we remember the sentiment of Ryan Tannehill in this city and really, I mean, across the league from everyone assessing this Titans team and how things went down against Cincinnati a year ago. And then the year prior, not being able to move the football in the fourth quarter in a tight window game against Lamar Jackson, which was Jackson's first playoff win. Guys, it depends on how he leads this team forward this year, because we saw him not do that a year ago. And I'm looking at this wide receiving core saying they've got to be able to help him. And I'm not sure there's another quarterback out there that wins with this receiving core without a run game like they're going to have to need to press forward. The tight ends are practically invisible. The receiving core, they had 15 completions on Sunday. And the receivers are, I mean, overall, they are on a milk carton. And they're getting their best receivers in the backfield, which is not a great sign. So I'm saying that giving Tannehill benefit of the doubt, knowing that there's not going to be a ton of production as it stands right now. That's one area where I don't know if they can improve all that much. They can get Burks back, but as far as speed and deep threats and explosive plays, that's coming from Hilliard and Henry, really, and the occasional receiver for a league that's built for the all-time number one receiver options, and then everyone else is sprinkled in. With that being said, it comes down to the pay and what he's willing to play for and what he thinks he could get on the open market, because the Titans can dump him without taking a big salary cap hit, unlike this year, which is why he stuck around and why we didn't see a restructure of anything of that sort, and why ultimately I think we saw AJ traded, Willie. What does Simmons command with his extension? And as they start to look through the roster, who are they about to extend offensively? What are they doing with Henry after this year? Is Haskins the replacement there? Is he ready to step up? There are bigger questions, I think, than quarterback based on how they're built. But if they truly – if they bow out the same way they did in the playoffs, I got to move on. We've seen enough. This tight window has now closed, and they've got to figure out the – they have to have an answer at quarterback. And Tannehill's got first crack at it right now. Mm-hmm. And he's had several opportunities to do it. You have to win in different ways in the playoffs. The Titans win one way. And when that way is shut down, they're done. Tannehill's got to change that, but he's going to have help around him, because Hilliard and Henry are not going to be enough.
Yeah, you're right about that, Hutt. Also, looking at this roster, and I was thinking about this as you were talking, Hutt. And you were explaining the things that possibly can happen and, you know, what they may have to replace and how this roster is going to look vastly different come next season. And I believe it will. But it just seems like, is it me or it just feels like they have so many, not just holes to fill, but they have the depth as well that they must take care of this offseason. So I don't know if it's too much to do in just one offseason.
Yeah, Bob. I mean, I think they can improve in several areas in the offseason. They're going to have more money to work with. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And moving forward, all these teams will. So they didn't have a ton of room. And ultimately, I mean, they created that. They knew that. But the 2020 season with the cap dipping based on COVID and all that, we never see it go down. It went down a bit. Now it's going to bounce back up with the new TV money. So they're going to have more options there. They still have the majority of their draft picks in place up top. You can turn things around if you draft well. Mm-hmm. They need to do that. Let's add that in, number one. And then they have to start the same way Robinson started when he took over, mm-hmm. from the inside out, because the offensive line, that is their identity. The run game is their – I don't think the identity of the offense changes, their philosophy on how they want to go about doing things. That doesn't mean they have to have a $10 million running back, a $15 million running back. I just think they're more physical, downhill, smash mouth, punch you in the mouth style than they are finesse and bombs over Baghdad, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think it's that style, and I don't think it's going to be. Drafting Malik Willis in the third round gives them some flexibility on what they want to do. But again, third round quarterbacks are generally backup quarterbacks. So they need a starter. I don't know if Willis is that answer. I didn't see that in the preseason. And Tannehill needs to be an answer in the postseason. And if he's not, they've got to figure out free agency, which I think there can be some movement there. And whether or not they want to do something to the draft and go rookie, I don't know. But I'm with you on the what is Tannehill going to command on a restructured deal or a redesigned payment plan than $30 million when he's taking up way too much of their cap right now?
This is going to be a big question for them, mm-hmm. regardless, after this season is over, to assess. Here's one thing I'm curious about is how do you think they feel now, 5 weeks later, about Malik Willis? Because let's give you an example. In hockey, one of the big stories right now is one of their recent first-round picks, Phil Tomasino, who's only 21. He didn't make the team. They were hoping he'd make a jump. He didn't. So yep. They're going to take a step back, hopefully, to take some steps forward not too long from now. Hopefully it's not very long, but we'll see. But they have that luxury, right? They can send him to the minor leagues, and he can develop. The Titans can't send Malik Willis to go play somewhere and develop. It doesn't exist in football. So how do you think they're evaluating him right now? Because that's part of this equation.
I mean, right now, 5 weeks later, I don't think their outlook on him has changed all that much, because I don't think he's getting a lot of reps with the actual offense. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's running some team stuff. He's getting some reps, but not many. And the reps he's getting are probably very specific to his overall skill set as it is. A lot of run game. A lot of out of the pocket. It's a different style than Tannehill, quite frankly, is what we saw in training camp. I will say, like, I thought he developed from the first time I saw him in May until the end of training camp. I did think they coached him up to a point where he wasn't just one read and bolt, sometimes half read, bolt. It was going to be a run fest in the first preseason game, and then it ended up not being that by the third. So I saw progression there, but I mean, they're limited to what they trust him with right now, and that's not going to change until he has a full offseason with the team. He's a development project for them. That's not a bad thing. I'm all for that in the draft, in the mid rounds. If you think you can get a guy that's going to be a great backup or compete for the starting job, but he's not Tannehill. And I think people see the flash in the preseason. I see people, the national media, are acting like there's some quarterback battle in the preseason. There was not. It wasn't close. And I don't think it's close now to where they would look around and say, you know what, Malik Willis is going to turn this passing game around. Passing game is not, I mean, that's not his forte right now. It's making plays outside the pocket. And I think they're better off with Tannehill in that regard now. 5 weeks later, I think their outlook hasn't changed. They like him, but they don't want to have to play him yet. And I wouldn't either. I would want Tannehill to stay healthy, and getting sacked five times in a game, getting rocked, and the new concussion protocols that are in place, that's probably not going to happen.
No, you're right about that. Caleb Farley, And we've talked extensively about him and his lack of playing time, his inability to pick up on the NFL game. Now, I know they're waiting on Elijah Moulton to come back. I don't know when he will be back. But is this – how much longer do you think they're going to give him? Or do you think they – in their minds, they're like, hey, listen – we're done with it, but we got to play him because we have no depth.
So this is a fascinating question that you bring up because I feel like they've got to play him.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking with Koharski about this, and he's like, look, if he's not good enough to play, don't play. And I'm thinking they've already tried that. They put Terrence Mitchell on the field before him. He was signed on a Wednesday and played that week, and he was awful. Terrence Mitchell took the blame for it in the locker room. I'm thinking, man, the first round pick should be taking the blame for that. And now the first round pick's playing. These are all questions that we had whenever they drafted him because he's barely played football, not just played for the Titans, but football, Virginia Tech, high school, in the corner position, I'm saying. He didn't play all that much. COVID, the injuries. He's a lot like Dylan Raidens in that regard. And that they've got to get him reps. They gave him a ton of reps in the preseason, and his athletic ability, Mace, mm-hmm. you can see it. Like, he's not a horrible player. I feel like they want him to be as aggressive at the line and the point of attack as Roger McCreary is. Roger McCreary is like a Malcolm Butler style corner where he's going to get beat. He gave up a touchdown this past week. So did Farley, but we're talking about Farley and not McCreary because McCreary had good position. Wentz made a great throw, great one-handed grab, pretty play. McCreary, they saw one-on-one, they went after him. All good. It's the NFL. But if Farley's in one-on-one, he's giving up too much cushion, and then the speed takes over. He shouldn't be getting beat the way he got beat. And you will know better than me on who's supposed to have over-the-top coverage or
that's
whether
the
or not Byard made the right read underneath. But it's a different style that I see between the two. I'm comparing McCreary and Farley. I think McCreary fits their defense. They thought Farley would, and for whatever reason, he's not nearly as aggressive or physical.
On that particular play, before we get you out of here, Hutt,
Byron
had already came down. He got to stay over the top. The corner has to stay over the top. He has to. And what that showed me, and I'm still trying to figure this out, where all this noise came from, that showed me he can't run. His transition is not good. He cannot run. He stumbled because he knew he didn't have the foot speed. And he's trying so hard to catch up to a guy, and he stumbles. I don't know what the Titans saw, what they're telling us they saw. I need to see some receipts on what did he run and when did he run it. Because right now, he looks like a 4.6 guy. Trying to run with 4.4s and 4.3s. He just can't do it right now.
Yep. It's a dilemma going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, real quick, we're just real brief. I mean, all these draft Knicks thought he was like a top 15 pick if he was healthy. So I don't – like, everyone was saying that, and then they were talking about his back. And you're right, that all the numbers, we didn't see him run because he was hurt so much at Virginia Tech that he wasn't running.
Yep, and the torn ACL, but – That is the tough blend of not picking up the intricacies and not having the physical tools to make up for it. That spells trouble right now. Can he grow out of it? That remains to be seen. And when they get Moulton back and they get some other guys, where does he fit in this? Well, we'll have to wait a little longer to get some of the answers to these questions. But, Jonathan, thanks for your coverage as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Always enjoy this, guys. Thank you so much.
All right. Jonathan Hutton, sponsored by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars and Edley's Barbecue. We're back with more here on Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, coming up at 1 o'clock, we are going to talk about Tennessee and Alabama and what is going to transpire in that one. This is Tennessee's best shot in a while to really jump in to the national picture. We'll see what happens there. And on the college note, remember, you've got the silly underdog picks coming up. We'll make our new picks tomorrow. I'll get back into the mix after I had to bow out. The internet was just not behaving. I understand I got roasted on the air as being a bad commissioner. I get it. I'll have to deal with the consequences tomorrow. But remember how it works. You can play online. Play. You pick the three football games. You pick the underdogs to win outright. You got to win outright. And you win prizes if you can take the weekly title. Play now at thegamenashville.com or you go to the app, 1025 The Game. So Silly Underdog Picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports. Voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. So Silly Underdogs coming up tomorrow. Now, D-Mace, let's sort of wrap things up on what we just talked about with Jonathan Hutton here. So we looked ahead, really, but looking at the now, you've got the AFC picture with the Titans leading a division. Here's a stat that I looked at, though, that would give you pause, right, if you're evaluating your roster. The Titans are 3-2, but they have been outscored, and this is largely because of one game, right? They got throttled by Buffalo, but it just shows you their margin for error. Everybody in the division has been outscored except for one team, Jacksonville, over the five games. Jacksonville is plus 31. They're sitting at 2-3. The Titans are 3-2, but they're minus 22, largely because of how lopsided the game was up in Buffalo.
Exactly.
But Indianapolis is minus 25. The Texans are only minus 13. They're actually better than the Titans and the Colts, but they have the worst record. Some people think that that is a way to evaluate how good your team is. And I'll ask you if you buy into that. Is if you overall in your games are outscoring the opposition, that's usually a good sign. And if you are underwater, as the Titans are, it's usually not a good sign, and it shows you how little margin for error you have there. So how would you factor that in? The fact that Jacksonville is the only team on the plus side of overall point differential.
It's weird, but I think in a few of those games, now Jacksonville's defense have held teams to 10 or less.
When they waxed the Chargers, that gave them a plus 28.
I think that's what really put them over.
Yeah.
Because typically, if you see, you know, a situation like that where, you know.
And they shut out the Colts, I should say. So both of their wins have been
big
blowouts.
Yeah, blowouts.
And then they've not been able to win the close games. The Titans are the opposite. The blowouts, they've been blown out, but they found a way in three of the four close games
to
find a way to win.
Their points for is less than their points against
the
Titans.
Yes, they've scored only 96 points. They've given up 118.
See, it's just like Jacksonville. That one game sort of put
skews
them
it.
Over the yeah, skews it. Well, that Buffalo game skews it for the Titans.
Definitely. But there are some people that say that's still kind of an indicator of how powerful your roster is. I'm not saying that's right, but there some people do say that is a hint of what your team actually is in terms of sort of a power capability. But it's only five games. Now we'll check back after 10 games, after 15 games, and see how it changes.
Well, if you look at this team from a defensive standpoint, and I said this yesterday, they have more sacks at this point of time this year than they did last year. I think they have more interceptions this year at this time than last year. Forced fumbles, they have more this year at this time than they did last year. So even with now pass defense, they're not good. They rank, I think, 30th. Total defense, they're 10th. Rush defense, they're 8th. Okay. But as many injuries as this team has had on the defensive side of the ball, they've still been able to make the plays when they needed to make
100%.
Them. They've been an opportunistic defense. And that's what Vrabel wanted to get out of them last year. That, yes, you know, it's good to be a good defense, but we need those game-changing plays. We need those interceptions. We need those forced fumbles. We need those, you know, pick sixes. They're getting them now.
Yes. they have done a tremendous job at the little things, the competitive edge, the belief that they're going to win. That's how they're 3-2. But it does give you reminder of what everybody was talking about when they made the preseason predictions, mm-hmm. that they have outperformed their statistical output. We used points for points against a minute ago. So that's what would scare me. Number one, can they blow out any team in this league with what they have right now? I don't think so. Like, I don't think they're – it will be rare, I think, if they blow somebody out, anybody mm-hmm. out. That just tells you what's your ceiling. Also, Football Outsiders, their overall main mm-hmm. stat where they rank, Jacksonville has the best statistical profile mm-hmm. in the division.
Overall?
In the division. Among the four teams, overall picture, yes. Right. Jacksonville is seventh in the league. Now, take that for what it's worth. It's just one way of evaluating
and
a team.
Total defense.
Nope, total team.
Total team.
All three phases. They put it together in one in
offense,
one stat.
Defense, special teams.
Yep, they've got Jacksonville seventh in the league. Indianapolis is 11th. I don't know how that is, possibly, honestly. It does have to do with your strength of schedule, too. The Titans are 20th, and Houston is 24th. So Jacksonville has the best point differential mm-hmm. in the division. In Football Outsiders, they have the best overall stats of the four teams.
Well, this right here, this is a sort of an alarming stat, and I did this the other day, and I meant to bring it up yesterday, but I didn't. In the second half, I'm going to give you just the second half of the last three games.
The second half is a big question.
The last three games. Oakland. Las Vegas.
You caught yourself, though. That's progress.
Las Vegas, the Colts, and Washington. I'm going to give you the second half possessions. Interception. The second series. This is Vegas. Interception on the first series. Second series, downs. They lost it on downs.
Yep.
Burks dropped the ball.
Yeah.
He dropped the ball on fourth down. The third possession, they had seven plays, but they punted. Fourth possession, they punted. The Colts, second half. First possession, punt. Second possession, punt. Third possession, punt. Fourth possession, punt. Now, the fifth one, they downed the ball. I didn't even count
that. Yeah, and they got the key first down to run the clock.
Exactly.
So they did that.
Washington. First possession, punt, three plays. Second possession, punt, three plays. Third possession, they had the Hail Mary, basically the Hail Mary throw, great catch by Nick Westbrook.
Huge play.
Touchdown.
Probably won them the game, yeah.
Fourth possession, punt, seven plays. Fifth possession, punt, four plays.
Okay, so add it all up.
They've had 10 punts, one touchdown, one interception. That's not going to win you games.
Yeah, that's something. That's an area of improvement.
In second half, that's them.
That's not good. That's
no, like, it's not good at all.
Hey, the suit is back.
How
the
doing?
Suit is back.
All right. On that, let's move it to the other side. The suit will rejoin us. We'll reset here in just a moment. Here, great stuff here on 102.5 The Game. The suit rejoins us in a moment, and don't forget, we'll talk Tennessee, Alabama at 1:00.
But first, I think Derek
absolutely
has a word.
I have a word for you. To my men listeners out there, and I'm not you know, separating my women, but this is just for my men, okay? Some things you just got to talk to your men about. You got to talk to them close and personal about, all right? And what I need to talk to them about is Cool Springs MD. Over the years, more men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife Daphne, along with their experienced staff, give men the treatments required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men of Brentwood, Nashville, that's including me, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune systems, energy levels, which mine were low, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And that's what I want, and that's what I have. There's no better time to achieve a healthy lifestyle, people. I'm telling you firsthand, there's no better time and no better place, okay? So what are you waiting on? Give Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and Cool Springs MD a call today for an appointment at 615-486-3458. That's 615-486-3458. Or visit their website, coolspringsmd.com.
Wish that I was on a rocky top
down in already. You're going to hear that song a lot.
I'm sure. And speaking of that, as we get back to the show, Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, you heard the suit. He's back with us. We're going to get him back into the mix here. We'll talk Tennessee, Alabama at 1:00 with Wes Rucker from 24/7 Sports. very good coverage of the Vols, and we will get their perspective coming up here soon with game day coming in. Speaking of college football, tune in to the college football game of the week on 102.5 The Game. This Saturday, it'll be Middle Tennessee taking on Western Kentucky, two old-time rivals. That's going to be a fun, fun game. The college football game of the week is brought to you by Twin Peaks, home of the 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports and Superbook Sports, voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. All right, so, Chase, this is the question of the day regarding the Titans. We've had a really good discussion. We've looked at the stats of the four teams in the AFC South. And even though the Jaguars have the best numbers of all of them, of the four teams, it's still a very winnable division. There's no question about it. The Titans can win this division. They've won it the last 2 years, but they've got flaws. We wonder about their ceiling. So the question we're asking is, if you're John Robinson, are you in a go-for-it mode, knowing you've got a quarterback and a running back, the staples of your team, that are will be a year older next year. They're on the downside of their prime. But can you? Is there something you could load up enough with to be able to sit there and say, we've got a chance to beat Buffalo, we've got a chance to beat Kansas City, etc.? So how much are you going for it? How much are you just staying with the transitional kind of competitive transition that David Poyle sort of chose a couple of years ago, and you're seeing where they are right now? And are you thinking, look, after this year, I might have to scrap it and rebuild and go young. Where do you sit as you look at this roster after 5 weeks?
I look at it as I think they need to be more in a transition mode, because they have two, you know, you've referenced this quote a few times, but Floyd used to always say, if I have one position group I got to address, I can handle that. But when I have several, you know, in the season, it's obviously tough to handle. And that's where the Titans are at right now. The offensive line needs a lot of work. The receiving core needs work. I mean, you can make an argument. The secondary certainly needs some work.
Corner, in, you know, specifically, no question.
So they have some holes that they got to fill. And, you know, even if you go and you start working the trade market and you go for it, you're not in a position as the Titans. You're not in a position like the Rams were last year, where you can go make these big moves and basically rob from the future to win a ring. You're not where Buffalo is, where you can go make those big moves. They can do that. They can give up the draft capital, and they can fill to the cap and then know that they're going to have to deal with it later to go for it. It paid off for LA, and it, you know, Buffalo is the best team right now before they've even done some of those moves. You know, they signed Von Miller in the offseason as a part of that going for it. The Titans are just not close enough to do that. Now, all that said, you could tweak. You could, you know, maybe go make a move for a receiver that isn't going to cost you a whole lot down the line, and you could still win the division, and then you never know what might happen. I mean, Cincinnati is a prime example of they won their division, they made the playoffs, and they made a run. And the Titans did that a few years ago when, and they were the wild card, when they went all the way to the AFC Championship game. So I think, and I think this is where John is smart, that you have to look more than just what's in front of you. You have to look a few steps ahead. I think it would be detrimental to give up the assets of the future to go for it now rather than just standing pat and going through this transitional phase and then figuring out what you think you have left in the offseason. Because that's another thing. Then you have a real big decision to make. Do you want to stick with the group that you have and build with Tannehill and Henry, like you said,
a year older, yeah,
that are a year older, and
got to address the contract. You actually have already positioned yourself with Henry,
right,
contractually, at least for next year. Tannehill will have to be addressed.
Or do you want to go into rebuild? And, you know, I would look at it as that conventional wisdom might tell you that it could be time to get a lot of draft capital and rebuild that way. But I know what I'm thinking and what Titans fans are thinking. They've missed so much on these first and second round picks lately that you'd be scared for them to do that. It's a tough position.
A question that has come up when you're looking at, well, just stay with the transition and see if you can be better next year, is Jacksonville finally getting it together? We just looked at some of the trends. Statistically, they are way better. They're probably sitting there going, how are we 2-3? We should be at least 3-2, but they're not. But they do have a young roster. I'm not saying they're going to be the Colorado Avalanche, okay? where they used to be the team down and out, going nowhere. They took a while, but now you see what the Avalanche are. I don't know if the Jags are like that, but I do look at, hey, if they're not ready this year, what are they going to look like next year? How winnable is this division next year? Let's throw the Colts to the side for a moment, because as they try to figure out who their quarterback is, they're in a musical chairs situation. That's the one thing that would give me pause about the, quote, transition, is this might be my last year of being able to sort of go get this division, as right. winnable as it is. That's the trick.
Well, and what you have to ask yourself, too, as you play this game of beyond this year is, what's your faith level in Malik Willis? Do you really yep. truly believe that Malik Willis is a starting quarterback in this league?
And how would you know other than everything you found out in the preseason? Again, I'll kind of make a parallel with the Predators. The Predators have the ability to put Phil Tomasino in a developmental situation and work on some things and then bring him back whenever they think he's ready. The football teams do not have that luxury. So what could they have found out? Like, and what will they find out by the end of this season on what they have in Malik Willis? There's only so much, I guess, you can do behind the scenes. I'm sure they're working with him, but I would love to ask somebody in their developmental department, what have they found out about Malik Willis in the last 5 weeks specifically? Right. And what are they feeling better about things? And how are they going about that process? What does that process entail? Because it's such a big part of the future.
I mean, right now, he is the future.
Yeah, but how would we know if he's going to be the guy or not? All of us sitting here in the dark, we'll never know the answer.
I mean,
you can't know.
When you make those picks in the back of the minds of John Robinson, more so right now, you're thinking, well, Malik Willis is the quarterback. Hassan Haskins could be the running back. Obviously, Treylon Burks would be the top wide receiver. You would hope that Nicholas Petit-Frere, Dylan Raidens would be staples on your offensive line. You don't know if any of that is going to pan out. We think we have some answers right now, but there's still a lot of incomplete. You know, I was notorious in school. I'd get the incomplete sometimes. That's where they're at. And, look, it's a tough position for them to be in, no doubt. Coming up next, we will shift gears. We'll talk some Vols. We'll talk Alabama. Wes Rucker, 24/7 Sports, is going to join us, and we know that that is going to be a huge game coming up this weekend. But can you beat Vegas this football season? Superbook Sports gives you the chance every week to go head-to-head with the best odds makers in Las Vegas. There's no computer algorithms. There's no guys across the pond setting the lines. It's just the best team of odds makers in the business behind the counter at the Superbook in Las Vegas. And here's the best part. They have some of the best odds boosts and promo bets anywhere. And I mentioned Tennessee and Alabama. Alabama is a 7.5-point favorite right now going into Knoxville. And home dogs bark louder, according to my friend Rick. So download the Superbook Sports app or visit superbook.com and start your battle against Vegas right now. Just visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789.